Creating Windows Not Bars, a show on Justice Radio on WMPG with your host Linda Small. Today we are talking with Kevin Bott, founder and artistic director of Ritual for Return, a homecoming rites of passage for transition from incarceration to freedom, and two of the recent graduates of the program, Benina Shoemake and Tiana Scarlett. This is part two of our extraordinary conversation about ritual return rite for passage. Ty, we'll start with you. How do you overcome the vulnerability to tell your story in the first place? If you're telling your story for the very first time, and I'm assuming most of it is in front of folks you don't know, how do you get to that place where you can be real and raw?
I can remember the day of the ritual itself. Literally me and my sisters, because they are my sisters now, we stood in the back to pray. And I must have cried for maybe like 15 minutes straight because I felt like I could not do it. And it took my brothers that had already completed the ritual for return to come in here and say, you got this, right? You got this. We love you. And we're going to back you up no matter what. And I think that, I realize that in a time where you're dealing with guilt, shame, and fear, if you are reassured that you matter, you're loved, and you're forgiven, despite how you may view yourself, it builds within you an opportunity to be bold and courageous. And then you also have to be tired of hiding, tired of hurting, tired of lowering yourself, you know, and shrinking in places where you know you should be a giant in. You have to really come to a place where you know you deserve the opportunity to heal. And I think for a lot of us, especially for me, it's like, what does healing look like, right? Where do it start? Where does trauma end? Does it ever end? How do you process it? It's just really like taking it day at a time. Reminding yourself, this is a process. I've come far. I'm worthy. I deserve it. And it's worth working through, because the truth is, Rituals for Return has now come 17 years after my incarceration. It is the first year of my life since incarceration that I'm healing, that I'm able to look in the mirror and say, you matter. You deserve the opportunity to flourish. You deserve the opportunity to show the world your brilliance and not hide behind shadows. And it's okay to be vulnerable, because the only way you're going to heal and get through it is if you're vulnerable. You have to be able to release the toxicness of shame, fear, and guilt. You have to be able to tell yourself that this has happened, but this has happened because of things that has taken place in the past. No one goes to prison or commits a crime for something that they decided to do in one day. There are events that lead up to the day of incarceration, even if it doesn't look like it. Trauma is also a process, and it builds on top of layers and on top of layers on top of layers. And sometimes, especially if you don't identify what it is to be trauma impacted, it becomes too late before you even have the opportunity to realize you're too deep in it. In a moment that I was able to sit down and start unpacking my trauma, thanks to Rituals for Return, I was then able to truly start forgiving myself to say, hey, you did not wake up and decide to commit a crime. You did not commit a crime going into that crime to commit a crime. But also look at the events of things that has happened in your life that were tragic. And as a child, you do not deserve that. I spent 10 years, 2 months and 11 days incarcerated. I went in at 18. My trauma started way before that. And the thing is, if you're too afraid to speak about it, you can't heal. And Rituals for Return made me say, this is God's way of helping you forgive yourself by bringing you a community of people who have been trauma impacted just like you, and showing you they love you and you deserve the opportunity to heal and grow and move on. And that's truly why I would never, ever, ever take lightly the healing transformation that I started, because it's a process. So I'm still healing every day. But Rituals for Return gave me that opportunity to remind myself that I was given a voice for a reason. And that's where I am today.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ty and Bae. We are honored that you're sharing with us today, and just in awe of your strength and resilience, and for inspiring other listeners, especially those who are system impacted on the inside and out, to know that healing is possible. That it's a process, but it's possible. And so you mentioned your first introduction to Kevin, and you were watching the men's performance. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? What inspired you in that performance to say, geez, that is something I think, you know, I want to be involved in. I want to do for myself, my family, my loved ones.
Okay, so first of all, the performance is so energy filled. People say, oh, I'm going to invite you to my play. It's really not a play. It's not a play at all. It's definitely an exchange of energy from performers to the people watching the performance. Mm-hmm. And the exchange of energy that night at the men's performance was so electric. It was so emotional and so moving that I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And I was very intrigued about the process that brought them to that point, because I knew it was a process to get them there. I knew they didn't just get up overnight and learn how to get up there and do what they did. Mm-hmm. So I was very intrigued about the process that would take you, you know, through that to get to the point of the performance. The performance was awesome. It's a back and forth. It's audience participation. It's a whole workshop before you even get downstairs to see what's going on. I can remember when Kevin first taught us the word Archimen. And
I'll just jump in. Archimen is the ancient Greek word for we begin. And we say Archimen often before our workshops, after our workshops, we say during the ritual, just with the idea that we are always beginning. We're always at the starting point. Even at the end of the ritual, we end the ritual with the word that we all say together, Archimen, because we're just starting just once again. So sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. And so I was like, wow, okay, that was powerful. And, you know, so then when I got downstairs and I actually got to see the performance of the men and ask you, you know, will you bear witness? And then you respond back to them, yes, I will. And it just was like this electric exchange of energy from performers and watchers that it was awesome. It really was. It was truly awesome. And even once I did my own and my family that I brought to, you know, watch me perform, they were so like, they felt the same way afterwards. You know, they was just like, even the exchange between performers, because the like Tayana was talking about how fearful she was, and how I had told Tayana, like, listen, if you need me, just put your hand down and wave and I'm coming, you know? So even the exchange between two performers, like, we were there 100% to support each other. And we need that. In life, people say, oh, it takes a village to raise a child. My belief and philosophy that it takes a village to live life, and that we are each other's village. And so at that time, during the performance that we did, we definitely were each other's village. We definitely were each other's support. You know, when we stumbled, the audience didn't even know that we stumbled, because we were so supportive of each other. And yeah, it was good. It was really good. But seeing actually... Kevin came to group and talked about ritual for return before they even did the one with the men. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I came up and I talked to Kevin or whatever. And then he was like, yeah, we're going to do a woman's one. I was like, oh, okay. But when I actually went to the performance of the one, and listen, I had just had wrist surgery like the day before and came. Okay.
They had like 17 surgeries in the whole process that we were together.
I had back surgery and knee surgery during my ritual, doing that. And I was dedicated and motivated to come because what I saw with the men, because of how I seen them like live in their vulnerability, how I seen how, you know, they opened up and they just let us in. And it was powerful. It was powerful. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen one, you definitely got to come see one.
Oh, I saw a striking and powerful performance in Chicago at the Humanities Council Conference, and it was extraordinary. And one of the reasons why we're talking today, why we want to work with Kevin to bring ritual to return for to Maine and any other states, you know, that we can, and because it is,
it could be good.
You know, it can create a nationwide community, right? A ritual for return community, right? To broaden the network. And so I have a follow-up question for you, Bay. Can you talk to a little bit about, you said the world might not remove those labels, but you can remove them for yourself. And I wonder if you might talk a little bit about what is the impact of removing those labels when you look in the mirror or talk to yourself. What does that mean for you?
It means a lot. It's hard carrying so much mental and emotional baggage about bad decisions or, you know, things that you did in your past that help you create these labels that society view you at, you know? Mm-hmm. It's hard carrying that. It's a big weight. It's heavy, you know? So when you can get to the point where you can remove some of those labels, you remove some of that baggage, you remove pounds, you know? And so your load gets lighter and you can see things a little bit more clearer, you know? So it's definitely important. I've learned that sometimes people view you like you view yourself, right? And it's something that's unconscious, not even something that's verbalized. So if you view yourself in a negative light, people pick up that negative energy and they begin to view you the same way that you view you. Hmm. So if you can heal and turn those negative views of yourself to something positive, you move in a different way. You know, you move with intent and purposefully versus just moving. Because when you living in this negative space, you just move. There's no purpose. There's no intent. There's nothing behind it. And now you view yourself in a positive light, in a positive way. Strangers view you in a positive light, in a positive way, because they pick up on the energy. We energy beings. And if you got a whole bunch of self-doubt and guilt and shame pushing you down, it shows up in your life in ways that you don't even expect it to, unconsciously, not even consciously, unconsciously. So people pick up on it and they view you the way you view yourself. So it's important for forgiveness. It's important that we forgive ourselves for the things that we've done, for the mistakes that we've had done in the past, and for the things that we may do in the future. If we can't forgive ourselves, how can other people forgive us? You have to start with forgiveness of yourself and definitely coming through this, coming to terms, facing some things, dealing with some traumas is a beginning point of you forgiving yourself and a beginning point of healing.
Thank you, Baina. So we're going to take a quick break before I get back today. You are listening to Justice Radio with your host, Linda Small. Today, we're talking to Kevin, Baina, and Tiana about this extraordinary rite of passage ritual for return. Tiana, I'm struck by one of the things that you said, that, you know, you have to be tired of hurting, right? And you began this journey 17 years after your release, which is pretty amazing. So what would you say to people out there who've been released from incarceration for years and have not done any of this work, or have put it on ignore, or locked it down, or ignored it? What would you say to encourage them to start this healing process?
The first thing that they would have to do is embrace the fact that they are truly afraid, right? Because fear suffocates us. Mm-hmm. It suffocates you. It will. I know me personally, I was so afraid of what I thought about my own self that I projected it into mm-hmm. the world, right? Invisible stigma is so, 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 so scary. When I started telling my story in Rituals for Return, the feedback that I got, the love that I got, just the comfort of saying, you matter, and I've seen worse, I've heard worse. Mm-hmm. It confused me, because when I thought about it myself, I felt like I was the worst monster in the world. And let me just be clear, I didn't kill nobody mentally, emotionally. Anybody who deals with a case or, you know, are impacted, You know, that's big. So mental and emotional fear is it, within itself is a lot. But I didn't kill nobody. I never even really left the scene of my crime. But for me, I felt like I was the worst person in the world. I felt like I was a monster. I felt like I deserved every single thing that happened to me, right? But I knew that something was wrong because I was able to love and forget, love to love on others and forgive others when they couldn't forgive themselves for things that they had did that was 10 times worse than what I did. But for me, it was like, oh no, how dare you, right? And even when it came to my mother, like my mother mourned me for 10 years through my incarceration. And people don't get that. Grief is real. So for my mother, while I was inside doing time, my mother was outside mourning me because she felt like in some way she felt me. That was another thing that I added on to my own hurt, my own stigma, right? So to go back to answer your question, the first thing you have to do is acknowledge that you are afraid. The second thing is you have to be willing to be vulnerable enough to share your pain with somebody so they can help you unpack it. And for me, it was first Kevin and then my cohort in Rituals for Return, my sisters. Because once I started unpacking my trauma through their eyes and their hearing what they heard, they were able to then say things back to me that gave me aha moments that were like, wow, that's what you hear? That's what you see? In the event, it helped me start looking at myself differently. Because the truth is, if you only have your own faults, you don't have anything else to go off of. If you're too afraid to share with people, you're talking to yourself in your own mind. That means you don't have a different opinion. You're not able to view it in a different light because it's you talking to you. But when you share what you're going through with other people, it gives you a different insight. By having a different insight, I was then able to start looking at my situation from the outside because I had an outsider's opinion. I had their views on it. That's important. It's important. For 17 years, I was afraid to speak of what happened the day of my case, what happened leading up to my case, the things that I felt like I went through as a child, I was afraid to talk about. The moment that I started releasing it, the moment that I got a different perspective on it, the moment that I started realizing that, hey, girl, you deserve to heal and move on. And guess what? It's not that bad. But if I didn't have them to tell me that, I fear that I will still be stuck.
Linda,
And when
could
you're
I chip
stuck,
in with
you
something
don't.
to just echo something that ties
Absolutely.
around? You know, we know that there's a very, very high correlation between trauma and shame. We also know that, think the number, I'd have to check this, but I'm almost positive the number is 98% of people who wind up behind bars have been victims of childhood and adolescent trauma. So we know that with that correlation and the fact that most people get out of prison, come back into our communities, are walking around with deep levels of shame. Now, we also know that many, many people in our society who never wind up behind bars are also victims of childhood and adolescent trauma and are walking amongst us. What shame tells us, unlike guilt, which is like I did something wrong, shame tells us we are wrong. That we don't belong. We don't have a right to be loved. We don't have a right to belong within the community. And we can read, you know, in popular literature, Brené Brown's work all around shame. And when you're experiencing trauma, which we experience chronically because it lives deep in our bodies and in our amygdala and in our fear processing centers of our brain, we're walking around telling ourselves we're not lovable. We don't have a right to belong. Sometimes we don't have a right to exist, questioning whether we have a right to exist. And we all have a choice when confronted with that. And one choice is to close in, which is to listen to those voices, and that will shut us off and isolate us. Or, and what I hope Ritual for Return does, is invite people to open out. And in that opening out, I think what the participants experience, and what Ty was articulating so beautifully, is so many of us are living with this secret of how terrible we are. And when these women and the men have the courage and stand up under the hot lights of a black box theater and find the courage to speak that story and bring it into the light. Brené Brown says the disinfectant for shame is sunlight. You got to bring it out into the open. It has nowhere to go. It's like a germ. It can be destroyed in the light. And it gives people, system impacted and not, the permission to see themselves as human, to see that their shame that they're experiencing, the stories that they're ashamed of, maybe aren't so bad, or maybe are just part of the human experience. And what we're trying to cultivate is a community of people who have all had that courage and then can be supports for one another. And my goodness, the power, the passion, the talent, the creativity of all of these people who have gone through the program, The fact that we would set up a system whereby they would never get to bring those into our society, into our community, that all of these gifts are being withheld. Well, maybe that's a reason our culture is so sick right now, because we create spaces where people feel they can't tell these stories. So I just wanted to celebrate what Ty said, because it's not only a personal experience, it's backed up in the literature and in the research that we need to share so that we can, It's in the very thing that seems most terrifying that we can find the freedom that we're all searching for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for that, Kevin. And thank you so much for your wisdom, Ty. And we have time for one more question for Bay and Ty. And I've heard from each of you this idea of internalizing the negative views of our oppressors. And I wonder if each of you might tell us what we now know about you, what you know about yourselves. What is your new narrative, Bay?
I'm going to just read you something real quick.
Please.
Okay, so this was my vow that I did in the performance.
And could I just explain real quick to the listeners? So there is this kind of rehearsed and prepared performance, and the way I think of it is, if people are even somewhat familiar with kind of indigenous traditional boyhood to manhood rites, the elders of the village will take the boys and steal them out into the bush where they teach them what it means to be a man in that village. And then, having prepared the songs and the dances and the customs and whatever it is they're learning, they come back to the village and they do a performance. And so these stories that we've been talking about, that's the performance part. And we do movement work, and the women make masks, and there's the drumming. But when that is all done, when we've sort of demonstrated what we've learned in that liminal space of our workshop, we really strip away the theatricality. And just like in a wedding ceremony, the women have written vows, commitments that they're wanting to share and have the witnesses bear witness to. And it's not, there's no theatricality. This is just from the heart, and they each speak those and the people bear witness. And as witnesses, just as in a wedding ceremony, the witnesses are also saying that they are being accountable to hold Baina accountable to her vow and to support her in manifesting the vision of herself that she has. So I just wanted to contextualize what Bay is about to read.
Thank you.
I'm not going to read it all. I'm just going to need some snippets out of it.
Okay.
I realized that the mask I wore for so many years was not keeping others from seeing me, but keeping me from seeing myself. Mm-hmm. So for me to get to that point, it took a lot in my past dealing with fear and guilt and shame and trauma. I was this other person amongst people instead of being my true self, And I felt like if I was this other person, that then people couldn't really see me, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a mask for them. It was a mask for me, because in the process of doing that, I never got to see my own self. Mm-hmm. So today, I'm all mask off, right? I said, I'm definitely not the wounded child, the broken teenager, or the lost young adult. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not wounded or broken or lost. I'm in repair mode. I'm slowly but surely working on me every day, healing me, becoming a better version of me every day. Mm-hmm. I said, I am the one who has embraced my past, living in my present, and honoring my future. Mm-hmm. I know I can't change the past. My past is my past, and it has shaped and molded me into the person that I am today, right? Mm-hmm. I live in this present moment so that I can make my future better for me. So I have to stay in this present. I can't always be harboring on what has happened, what has passed. I have to live in what's going on now in this present day so that I can honor my future and be the best me in the future. And so through that process, I continue to grow and transform and mature and things like that. So those are some things that I wrote about in my vow. Yeah.
Thank you. Beautiful and powerful sharing. Thank you. Ty, how
Thank
about you? What is your new narrative?
I'm stepping out on faith a lot. Right now, I'm in the process of actually writing a book. And this is something that I have wanted to do since even being incarcerated, but I was too afraid to do so because I was afraid of myself, afraid of my truth. So the fact that I'm able to put pen to paper and say, I deserve this. This isn't for me, but for others who have been in the same place I am. That's big to me. I also now have the opportunity to give back because I'm employed by Rutgers in JSTEC, who was also that leading light for me while I was inside. Now I have the opportunity to go into the facilities and give back to others what was given to me through the same program. And I don't know. Honestly, it's for me, it's still a process. I still take it day by day. I still love to feel. I'm learning to process my feelings and give it meaning and unpack it. Whereas before, I would bury it, right? And don't talk about it. I talk about my feelings. I address my feelings. I approach them today. But above all else, I believe in myself and I know that I deserve everything that God has for me. And I think if nothing else matters to me, that is the biggest thing. I know that whatever God has for me is truly a great thing because I don't believe that I serve a God that shall lie. And I don't believe that God has anything for us that is not a reflection of Him, right? So for me, it's like, girl, you deserve to soar and you reach past every limitation that you and others have set for you. And that's just where I am today. I'm stepping out on faith and I'm believing in myself.
Thank you so much. I'm just blown away by today's conversation. And thank you, Kevin and Tiana and Baina, for sharing your incredible stories of transformation and helping our audience understand sort of the challenges, but also the possibilities of returning citizens, right, who are coming home, and your amazing ritual for return journey. So, listeners, we have some exciting shows coming up on Justice Radio. We're going to explore criminal legal issues and processes in Maine, like what's it like to be arrested, arraigned, or go through the court system? What does it mean to plea bargain or go to trial? And how do the sentencing laws in Maine impact the people's lives? And we'll cover so much more. So please visit Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.